on the table and people eat and they go home and they have time to talk and converse, and it's not a factory. It's it's still considered a sort of a creative art. But, you know.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hi, this is Chris France of Talking Heads, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, Accra.
On Friday, August 23rd, WGXC Live starts at 9 p.m. with the long-anticipated grand opening of the Avalon Lounge at 29 Church Street in Catskill. The opening party will feature P.J. Gray of the Upstate Soul Club playing all vinyl funk, soul, and R&B 45s. After midnight, Third Culture Kid, a.k.a. Uncle Rudy, plays classic house, disco, and beyond. This show will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM at 9 p.m., then becomes an extra web stream at 10 p.m., where listeners can tune in online at wgxc.org/listen.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Science of Aesthetics Laser and Med Spa, offering a wide variety of multifaceted cosmetic services at 810 Union Street in Hudson. Consultations are available. Information at 518-697-5390 and scienceofaesthetics.net.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Karen Locker of Kingston, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Good evening. You're listening to WGXC Accra, 90.7 FM. I'm Alana, your host, and this is There, a monthly program celebrating all manner of performance and performance sounds. There broadcasts on the fourth Sunday of the month from 7 to 8 p.m. And this month we have a very special live studio guest, so you're in for a treat. Katie Down is here. She's visiting from Points South, Brooklyn, and Marlborough, New York. And she is a woman of many talents. I'm not going to read your whole bio just yet, but a sound artist and musician and composer and therapist and healing arts practitioner and teacher. I think that's just a few of the things. Yeah. So welcome
Thank
to the
you.
Studio.
So nice to be here.
I'm going to turn up here. Yeah, we just took a nice little walk around the property a little bit, got to see some of Wave Farm, which is up here. If you haven't been, it's in Acre, New York, near Caro, between Caro and Wyndham, a very beautiful property where the study center is and where the Wave Farm residency program is held, as well as the Acre studio for WGXE. And you're here because you were just teaching, well, co-leading and running and teaching a really exciting sounding workshop, yeah. Not too far. What count? It's down in Ulster County?
In Ulster, yeah. Yeah, in Ulster County.
And where, who is sponsoring it?
It's a retreat center called Maha Rose, and it's called Maha Rose North. There's Maha Rose in Brooklyn, which is a healing arts center focusing on a lot of different, quote, healing practices, including acupuncture and massage and Reiki and sound and family constellations and lots of meditation and many, many, many modalities and offerings. And then up here in Hurley, they have a retreat center there. Mm. Usually it's through the fall, and then I think they take the winter off, and then they have actually a retreat center in Mexico.
Oh, wow. That sounds so pretty good. How do I sign up for that one?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Me too.
Whoa, that's great. So this was this a full week workshop?
It was a 5-day workshop. We call it Sound School. And for lack of a better word, I just think that Sound School kind of encompasses what we're looking at, which is just the idea of what sound is, not outside of the realm of what we might call music. Mm. So, right, it's sort of under that rubric. Music lives under that, or sound lives under the rubric of music, too. Of course, they're interchangeable. And it really comes down to the listening. So this was our level 2 training for people who are clinicians or body workers or sound practitioners, people who are working in the healing arts using sound. Mm-hmm. And so many of the people at this particular retreat were our former students from our level 1 training. And then we had a few newbies, people who are already working in this realm. And we had a bunch of great guest teachers, including Steve Gorn, who's a local up here in Accord, doing Nada Yoga. And
what's
the yoga
Nada
of sound.
Yoga?
It's the yoga of sound.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
It's the yoga of sound. And wow. Steve Gorn is a very accomplished, very well-known Bansuri, Indian, North Indian Bansuri player and an Indian scholar of North Indian. He's, of course, knows both. And then we had Frank and Judy Bosco, who are music therapists who live up here as well. And they also do a lot of sound. They did 5-element tuning fork work. And then we had Timothy Hill, who is a very well-known overtone singer. He sang with David Hikes in the harmonic choir for many years, and so he did a workshop. And then we had Andrea Williams, who is a deep listening practitioner and worked with Pauline Oliveros for many years. And we also had Joseph Schmidlin and Michael Jay, who did one whole day of work in osteopathy or hands-on using the idea of the still point and reaching a point of homeostasis using sound and listening with the hands. And also we did a bunch of gong stuff. So it was an
wow.
incredibly full 5 days,
I can
including
imagine.
The teaching
yeah.
that Jessica Kaplan, who's my partner in sound school, she and I run this, and we were teaching every day too, so they got a lot of stuff.
That sounds incredibly
today
dense
was our last day, and everyone was just blissed out and also exhausted at the same time.
Yeah, everyone's gonna sleep really hard for at least 48 hours,
and they probably just want a lot of silence for a while.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I want to talk more in more detail about some of the stuff you're exploring at this, but first I want to go back because you have a really interesting background. You're coming from, you know, all these different sort of arenas of sound and music. And, you know, I imagine some of your students are also coming from a varied background. And I'd love to just talk a little bit about sort of where you started, how you first came into music. I mean, I sort of made the assumption that you started as a musician as a kid, studying music, but when did you first, you know, consider yourself a musician?
I'm not sure about that, where I considered myself a musician, but I started to dive more seriously into music in high school. But I started as a flutist. I'm still a flute player, classically trained with jazz. Played saxophone for a while, not very well, but I'm a pretty good flute player, I guess. And I still play it a lot. And so then I decided to pursue it. I was sort of oscillating between theater, actually, being an actor. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool. I didn't know that.
Yes. Y'all, acting. And so, but I sort of felt like I needed to make the choice. And so I went for music, and then it drew me into the theater world drew me in later after graduate school, actually, where I went in Boston for composition.
And you were at Berkeley, is that right?
I went to Berkeley for undergrad, and then New England Conservatory for graduate studies. And then it was during the Bosnian War, actually, it was a long time ago. And I felt drawn to creating something that had to do to do something with my music that would help people. Mm-hmm. And I was very drawn to the music of the Balkans at that time as well. So I wanted to do something for that region. And so I created a play with a theater company called Letters from Sarajevo. And it was based on a book of the same title that was a compilation of letters and from the city of Sarajevo. And these letters were smuggled out of the city and into parts of Europe by a woman named Anna Cataldi, who was a UN correspondent at the time. This is, of course, a long time ago now. But that's what drew me back into the world of theater, is actually wanting to do something with my music. And so I ended up music directing and and doing a sort of co-script adaptation of this play. And then as you and I know, we know each other from the theater world. So I started to do a lot more theater after that.
And that sort of just, you just piqued your interest to do sound design and...
Yeah. I didn't know a thing about sound design. I just created live music for that show. Mm-hmm. You know, and soundscapes. I've always been interested in what sound is and sort of in the sort of more abstract sense. And so I remember we played a bookcase for one of the sound cues because it had the best sound of the cue that we were trying to evoke something. So the bookcase was the best option with the microphones, like basically Foley stuff.
Oh, fun.
And so, yeah. And then when I moved to New York, fast forward, I started to work a little bit more in theater, did a little bit of film. Some dance and that kind of stuff. And
I mean, that's, you know, the show, I'm trying to think what year it was that I think I met you, was The Loneliness of Noam Chomsky, which was a show by a small theater company called the Butane Group.
Yes.
Noel Salzman was the director, and it had a pretty robust sound elements to it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, sound was a big part, big part of that show.
Yeah.
And it was a really great play. I loved that play. I loved working on that play. And I think that for me now, now that I'm older, but I just feel a little bit more drawn to not politics per se, but like, what are we doing as artists in the world? And that was a political play, you know, pretty political. Letters from Sarajevo was pretty political, although not in any way divisive, but just looking at what's going on in the world and how do we tell a story of the human condition, of human suffering, or of politics for that matter, you know, and voices that are being suppressed. So I think it is, for me, it feels really important, like an important role for us to take.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like sometimes, or at least maybe less so now, but it has been, I feel like people tend to think of sometimes of theater as being a little bit more removed from social justice or things that are more politically oriented or even just related to, you know, this sort of like this either elite thing or this kind of rarefied, you know, small, like nobody's going to see it except the people who are making it and their friends, or that kind of thing about theater, and that music is something that people always think of as more accessible, more immediate, you know, connecting to the people more. And it's interesting that you found, you turned to theater looking for a way to have more of a social connection or...
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think you know, music, all the arts are democratic, you know, or at least that maybe is a goal, is to create, you know, an opening for anyone who's interested, right? So there's a line of inquiry there. And yeah, it becomes problematic when opera tickets are in the hundreds of dollars or theater tickets and, you know, but, you know, ultimately our goal would be is to have the arts be a non-elitist separate thing, that it's just part of daily life. And yeah. And so I feel pretty strongly about bringing music into that. When I did Letters from Sarajevo when I was working for an NGO, and, I was doing concert promotion, actually.
Oh, wow.
I was doing promotional events, and because of my music connections, I did music events mostly to raise money and awareness. And so, again, bringing the music in and letting it be a tool for coming together. And I think it all comes full circle now in my therapy, my music therapy work and my sound work. It's still hopefully facilitating the process of a coming together in some way.
How did you, or when did you first sort of take an interest in actually studying healing arts and psychology and sort of taking that? Because that does sort of seem like a big step.
A left, you know, turn. If
a big, yeah, or a big commitment, a new level of commitment, put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Not a second career for sure. Mm. So, I was doing sound design and music and live music for theater and dance and et cetera for a while. And I also was working as a teaching artist for a little bit. And that was going into schools, mostly schools that had a lot of maybe some difficulties, lack of resources in dangerous neighborhoods. And I saw the efficacy of music with the kids to really bring something out in them. I had a lot of kids wanting more, coming out of their shell, being moved by whatever was happening in the classroom, whether it was a songwriting workshop or an improvisation workshop or whatever it was. The music was some kind of entry point for them that was a little bit different than your than sort of your average academic approach, even like band or orchestra. Mm-hmm, you know, just looking at music in a different way through a different lens. And I remember this one kid. It was a songwriting residency I had, and it was day one, and they were little kids. They were like maybe third or fourth grade. And this one kid just he was raising his hand, jumping up and down. He had all of the ideas, you know. I had to sort of like, it's okay, you know, let's hear from someone else, kind of thing. And we're collectively as a classroom writing a song about, I don't know, springtime or whatever the theme was. I don't remember honestly, but and he just was so, he couldn't contain himself. He was so excited. And at the end of the hour, it was our first day of several days of writing the song. The teacher came up to me and said, "This boy has been selectively mute until today."
Wow.
Yeah.
And he was talking and...
It was as if he had, like, somebody turned the on button and, you know, he couldn't stop, you know.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah. And so that, you know, thing, and there were a few stories like that as a teaching artist and just as an artist, just to see how children in particular are affected by music. They're very curious, and we as adults, we tend to not tap into our curiosity that much. You know, we like to be experts. Mm. We don't like to not know things. And kids are really all about not knowing. They're all about digging in and like discovering stuff and banging on things, you know, for lack of a better, you know, way to describe it, but they're into it, you know. And so so I saw that as an opportunity to work with children in particular. And also going back to the work in Bosnia, I really wanted to work with traumatized populations. I wanted to work with refugees. Actually, I was really drawn to that work, and I still am very much so. And now the focus of my practice is really, you know, on trauma, honestly. And I mostly work with adults. So, you know, it's funny where this work leads you. You know, it's but we all have music in us. And children are a great way to remind us of that.
Yes, I try to remember to be, I don't know if childlike is the right word, but to, you know, hold on to the child impulses, you know, just in like everyday life.
Yeah, it's a wonder.
It just brings so much more pleasure and joy to everything.
Yeah, we could just stare at a tree and look at it and wonder about it and be in wonder and or in awe of the tree and discover it and like feel the bark and the leaves and, you know, all that stuff, you know, smell things, touch things, even taste things. I'm not advocating for, you know, just go out and start eating random plants, but
mushrooms.
No, exactly. Right. There's curiosity that can also not be a good thing, but, you know, within reason or, you know, with discernment, which is perhaps a better way of than being judgmental. But me discerning, and to just to really to know that the unfolding and whatever it is infinite, and so so and I think that sound and music really helps to amplify that concept of the way that we engage in the world, because if we have the gift of hearing, which not all of us do, we have the gift of at least receiving. So we can receive vibration. So there are people who are deaf who can at least touch. They can touch sound. They can touch the back of a piano or the back of the guitar and feel the vibration of the strings. And they can even feel the different how a different chord feels in their body. So they can experience the sound by touch.
Have you worked with any deaf?
Yeah, I have. And it's really a profound experience. And I really want to do more of that. It's because it teaches me about how I engage with the listening process. But the more we can listen with our ears open, we're such a visual culture. Again, if we are gifted with sight, we are so reliant on that. But if we can use our ears as antennae to navigate the world and to really start to open and see it, or to hear what's beyond the scope of our hearing, I really think that it's a way to understand you know, the complexities of it gets a little esoteric here, but the complexities of the world or of life, because we tend to see things at face value and not try to look at things from all of the perspectives that you could possibly. And so it's the same thing with hearing, like, oh, I hear a car passing by that. And once it's passed, I'm not interested anymore. But if I continue to try to listen to where that car is going, and where it's going and why it's going in that direction and who's in that car, you know, all of the aspects of the car, the carness, right? It connects me to whoever that is, you know? And I think it's maybe perhaps like as we continue to try to be better humans, that listening can really be an act of compassion, you know, of empathy.
It's interesting that all the emotional kind of resonances that you have with sound, that, you know, like I'm often overwhelmed, excuse me, by just the amount of, if you're just thinking in a cerebral way of processing ideas and information, which we do more and more, you know, with the internet and everything now than we did maybe 15 years ago. You know, it's like your brain seems to have I'll just speak for myself.
Yeah.
Seems to have a limited capacity to process it all. Like you can try to take it in, but then there's kind of this overload that a lot of people seem to experience. And it seems like somehow with sound, you're taking in information, but it's going to a different place. So maybe your brain can process it differently or, you know, take in that information without the same overload. I mean, I don't know, maybe sound can, you can be overloaded with sound, of course, too, but
I think we can be overloaded by anything. You know, we can be overloaded by physical things, sensations by visual stimuli, by oral stimuli. You know, our nervous system is in reaction mode almost, you know, all the time, right, to whatever is happening outside of us, or, you know, what we're perceiving is to be outside of us. And yeah, but sound does. What's interesting about sound, and I think maybe it's true for visual as well, is that, you know, we're dealing with the law of resonance here, and so we can resonate with certain kinds of sounds, and then our body, as a kind of tuning fork, if you will react and respond to a different sound, because we're vibratory beings. We have all this movement, you know, our heartbeat and our respiratory system, circulatory system. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on, right? So we're, in a sense, like creating sound all the time. So then we can resonate with certain instruments. And you know how, like, you know, you go to a concert and you want to dance, you know, and you're, you know, it's just, it gets things moving. Or you might listen to meditative music or whatever that means, right? I don't believe in meditative music. You can meditate to anything, but.
I have a yoga teacher who brings in all kinds of rambunctious stuff that is not in any way.
You can meditate to Metallica, you know, big time. So, but you know, if it, or some, you know, something that's, you know, that's trying to bring the nervous system down, you know, titrate the nervous system down.
So the work that you do with sound baths, which mm-hmm. I've had been lucky enough to experience myself, did that come before you got sort of hardcore into studying psychology, or did the psychology come first and then the interest in sound baths come mm-hmm. out of that, or like just sort of healing arts in general?
Well, the healing arts in general interest was, you know, again, like it was earlier on. I've been meditating and interested in sonic meditation from the work of Pauline Oliveros and R. Murray Schafer from the Acoustic Ecology School. So I've always been interested in ways of listening as meditation. So that precedes like going back to school for psychotherapy. But the first sound bath I ever experienced was the same year I went back to grad school. So they really kind of came together in terms of the sound bath phenomenon. That's which has become a phenomenon now.
Yeah, it wasn't always as popular.
No, it's really exploded. It's just exploded. And I think it's really cool. I think it's interesting. And I think there are, you know, infinite ways to offer a sound bath, or sound meditation, or sound journey, or sound exploration, or sound massage. There's a million ways to explain or describe the offering. And a lot of people don't like the term a sound bath, but I don't care about the term sound bath.
Why is it? Does it sound like too therapeutic or something?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have an opinion either way of like liking or disliking the word sound bath. I love sound. I love baths. What's not to love? But there are some people don't like it, and that's fine. You know, use the term that you will, but it's an offering, you know, it's an offering. It is a type of meditation, although some people do go to sleep, but that's not really the goal of a sound bath. But after I experienced my very first one, which was in Joshua Tree at the Integratron.
What's the Integratron? It sounds great. Whatever it is, I want to go.
It is, I think it's geodesic dome, and it's out in Joshua Tree, or outside of Joshua Tree. And I don't know, I can't speak of it in terms of the details of who built it, but it was a man. And I'm sorry, the Joshua Tree Integratron aficionados out there. I don't remember his name right now. Like I said, I wasn't thinking I was going to speak about this, but go and use the interwebs to find out. And he built it to specific coordinates. And I think there are many rivers that cross underneath it, that communicate with extraterrestrial beings. So take that and do what you will with it. But what I do know is that the acoustic phenomena of the shape of the building is quite extraordinary. So the crystal bowls that are in the area, a specific area of the dome, create this acoustic phenomena that in which the sound is spiraling. And so it really literally bathes you. And it's very cool from an acoustic standpoint. If you're an acoustician or interested in that kind of thing, that's really, really interesting and really cool. And it definitely changes your brain chemistry. And there is a pretty profound somatic response to the sound. So that's what I noticed right away. And so I started to explore
help me
that.
For the layman like myself. Yeah. Somatic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was just
it's
curious.
It's body.
Oh, okay.
Physical.
So some kind of physical response, whether it's like your pulse or your skin tingling or
your nervous system. Right. Absolutely. So, you know, we are physical beings. And so our bodies are repositories and antennae for all kinds of different things. Right. So sometimes we react, we have a physiological reaction to things. And sometimes there's an emotional response to it, but the body responds to the emotional response too, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where that somatic part comes in. It was really an interesting experience. So I thought I would experiment with that a little bit. It was a little bit more popular on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. It's become extremely popular now on the East Coast. And I know many people who are doing it now, and everyone has their own take on it, which is really interesting. And I encourage people to go to them, because one thing that has been sort of a kind of a truism with at least the sound baths that I'm offering, and I've been doing them for 12 years now, which is longer than most people have been doing them. I'm not, you know, and that means nothing, but it's just, that's just true. Doesn't mean they're best at all. It's just I've been doing them for a while, and I'm always exploring and trying to change things up and thinking about sound and thinking about listening. I really do call them deep listening experiences. And from Pauline Oliveris's deep listening philosophy and practice. I think I lost the thread of the question.
No. Well, it's actually, you know, very, I'm just checking the time here. Yeah. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is WGXC 90.7 FM. We are broadcasting live from WGXC's ACRA studio at the Wave Farm Study Center. I'm Alana Medlock, your host. This is There. And I have Katie Down here in the studio with me, who's sharing some of her insights and experiences working in sound and music. And I forgot to announce at the very beginning, for those of you who were tuning in when we started, it was actually a classical piece of yours that I played, and I think it was called Reverie. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was one kind of music that you make. But you know, I know that you work you're part of a band called the Ukuladies, which is very very different.
Very different.
You know, antics and ukes and percussion and sounds, and that's
and
a whole different shebang.
Musical saws and toy pianos and glockenspiels and kazoos and really dumb jokes. And we're also a fake family from Regina, Canada.
Regina. Is that a town?
It is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who are you in the family?
I am Genevieve. I'm one of a pair of fraternal twins.
Oh.
And then we have Jimmy Lou. She's my fraternal twin. Philippa Thompson, a.k.a. And Mary Myers, who is Aunt Mary Louise. And Heather Warfel, who is Cousin Bunny. And we are the Ukuladies. We are a family act from Regina.
Fantastic. And do you perform on a regular basis?
We used to. We used to have lots of regular gigs in the city, and we've all sort of we have an album in the can, our second album, which hopefully will be ready by the holidays, whatever those holidays are. And we have a website, the Ukuladies, Ukuladies. And we have our first album is called the All Time Greatest Hits Volume 2, because Volume 1 was lost in a tragic ice fishing incident, as one, you know, can understand being from Regina, Canada.
Yeah.
And so it's a fun band. We've been around for a long time, and we are in fact a beautiful dysfunctional family in a sense. So we have our second album coming out at the end of the year.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I did not know.
Yay.
You have also a sound. I don't know how active it is, but you have a SoundCloud page if people want to check out your work there.
Or is there anything
anywhere else? Since we're talking about the Ukuleles, I think we'll take just a short break and play. Should I play another Like You? I've queued up a couple. There's another Like You and Rooftops.
Oh my goodness!
Do you have? I know that might not be the latest stuff.
They're old songs. Rooftops could be nice. Yeah. Sure, why not?
Right.
Go for that.
It's
got a little something in there.
This is Rooftops by the Ukuleles.
Just a hobby. I've made a small carpet of wool. I ride it at night over rooftops discreetly, so no one can call me a fool. And you made everything so nice. It was magic. I'm still up here flying tragically over rooftops tonight. That
was delightful. That was the Ukuleles, Rooftops. When was that album released?
Oh, goodness. A while ago. It's pretty old.
Are you having a wave of nostalgia?
Yes, right now? Yes. But, yeah, but we still sing that song. And Yeah, and in there, for you glass harmonica lovers of the glass harmonica, there is some glass harmonica. I play glasses, so I play glass instruments.
We haven't even talked about
talked about the glass instruments.
There's a lot of things we could talk about.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, one thing that our really exciting thing that our listeners don't know yet is that there are a whole bunch of instruments here in the studio right now. No glasses, but that's okay. So I think before we shift gears, maybe we could talk a little bit about drone.
Yeah.
And what it means to you.
What's not to love? Of course, the word drone has kind of a tough connotation. But really a musical drone is just a continual sound, rhythmic and or tonal. Or textural or tamboral.
What's tamboral?
Like a timbre. Oh, that's a really good question. Like the timbre of something, like something could be sharp or kind of dull. That would be like a good example. Timbre, I guess. So I'm hearing the cicadas or the crickets outside. So we've got this beautiful natural drone that's happening outside that the natural world is coming in. So nice. You know, the whizzing by of traffic on the highway is a lovely drone, if you like that sort of thing. You know, and I love to play drone-based instruments. My master's thesis was about working with patients using drone instruments. So I worked in a hospital with mostly patients who are dealing with symptoms of stroke. So we had some physical therapy stuff that I did with the music, and then speech therapy, and it was mostly neurologic patients. So I had my thesis focused on 6 case studies, different cases using different instruments or drone-like techniques. So I've, you know, been diving into that world of musical drone, and I love to dive into the simplicity of the singularity of a note, because one note incorporates or involves the universe, right? So in the one note, like the monochord, the Pythagorean monochord, Pythagoras was the sort of the granddaddy, at least from ancient Greece, of what we might call modern Western, our understanding of modern Western music theory, the harmonic series. And this is just, you know, basic stuff like how music and how one tone can be divided ad infinitum. And in each tone, there are it's a infinite amount of other tones, what people call harmonics or overtones. So the drone is the home. The drone is the singular tone in which this full spectrum of all sound exists.
Whoa.
Whoa.
I get it and I don't get it.
Exactly. Me too.
All.
Me too. I it's that kind of thing that you can't really get it because it's too vast to mm-hmm. really grasp, that words don't really do it justice. But it's cool stuff to think about. Let's put it that way. I mean, our breath is a drone. Our heartbeat is a drone, you know, until our final exit. So there's all kinds of drone stuff going on. Our circulatory system, right? The blood flowing, that's a drone. All the stuff that just is going constantly, continual flow. A river, you know, is a drone.
Hmm.
You know, the ocean.
Do you know if anyone's ever mic'd the inside of a body, like, you know, tried to capture?
I don't know.
I mean, an artist, I'm sure scientists have tried to capture all sorts of information about the circulatory system or whatever, but
I mean, you have to, you can, you it. Can, I mean, ultrasound. Yeah. Like a sonogram. I mean, that's your miking. You can hear your blood flow, right? You can hear your baby in mm-hmm. your womb, right? Mm-hmm. You hear it. So we can amplify the body's fluid systems. We can do that. I don't know, like going inside the body, but you can certainly mic the body from the outside and listen to all kinds of stuff. I mean, that's what a stethoscope does. Amplifying the heartbeat.
Right.
So,
And music penetrates, or sound penetrates. It goes in there. and the atoms or whatever go in there, right?
And, oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're...
Mingle.
Yeah, they mingle. It's like a cocktail party in there. I mean, we're really responsive to sound in a very big way. And actually, they're using sound more and more to, you know, in modern medicine, in what we call allopathic medicine, is they're using sound waves to break up cancer cells, and or cataract surgery sometimes is used with sound instead of laser.
I can't even...
Yeah.
Wow.
So I really, as a sound person, it's easy for me to say that I think sound is the future of medicine. But then I spoke to a cardiologist who just told me that he had come back from a whole conference with other cardiologists, and he thinks that sound is the future of medicine. So there you go.
So there's, you know, something to look forward to, I
guess.
Yeah,
I'm excited. So it's non-invasive surgery, I guess. But I right now, we still need surgery. And
so
we still.
Just the cataract thing. I'm trying to get my brain around it.
It's I don't know how it works.
Something
honestly.
Is, but it's some kind of vibration.
It's a vibration that will.
Instead of a laser.
Exactly. Yeah. And like laser is still vibration to some degree. So I, you know, but it's sonic vibration, I guess. So I don't know. I'm not an expert in that, but this is what I've heard. And, you know, that is something that they're doing. And it's definitely, there's certain kinds of cancer cells. I don't, you know, and again, I'm not here to poo-poo allopathic and, you know, Western medicine on any level. You know, I'm a big fan of all medicine, as long as it helps you. But it is, if we think about the way that we are dealing with our health and we're dealing with symptoms and we ingest a lot of things and things that we don't necessarily maybe aren't that great for us. If we can be non-invasive and work with our own healing capacities, I'm not saying that we can always do that. Not everyone is able to do that when we're dealing with chronic or acute, you know, very serious illness. However, you know, if we can come to a place of stillness more often using sound or using listening and meditation, perhaps, I would like to offer the possibility that that there will be less instances of the kinds of illnesses that we're seeing that are so often stress related, you know. So it's a longer conversation, of course, and it requires a lot more depth of research, of course. But there's a ton of research out there.
I'm sure Googling is one way to find it. But if there's any particular source that pops into your head right now that you think people, you know, some website where people are collecting some of this thinking.
There are quite a few. I'm not going to just say, but I think it's just a matter of now we have everything at our fingertips. So just, I just say, take the time. If you're interested in this, take the time to look at it and research or reach out to me if you're interested, and have a conversation.
What's a good way for people to reach you?
Hello out there. I hear voices.
Oh, hello.
So I have a website called Soundwell Center, soundwellcenter.com. And that's my music therapy practice, my private practice, which is based in the city in Brooklyn. Although I'm going to start seeing clients hopefully in Beacon soon. And so you can, you know, email me, katie@soundwellcenter.com, and I will email you back. And I'm just so interested in talking about this. And if people have other ideas they want to exchange, that's great. If they have questions or want to learn more about trainings, you can talk to me about things I'm offering. But I'm also happy to point you in direction of other trainings. So there's lots of people doing interesting stuff out there.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
So, you know, we got some sounds to make.
We do. It's exciting.
Is there anything you would like to say before we go on a little sonic offering? Mm-hmm.
So in this sonic offering, these are drone instruments, drone-based instruments. So we have a couple of monochord instruments called Monolinas, which are German-made instruments. Again, going back to Pythagoras for a minute, sort of principally looking at overtones. One is in C, one is in F, and the way that they're played is a continual pattern of playing that brings out the natural overtones in these instruments. They're very much similar to an Indian tambura, or you know, other drone-based instruments, I should say. And so, but these are modern instruments. And then I have a hand pan, which is called a rav drum. And it was built by a drum maker in Siberia. And it's a drone-based instrument. And then there's an imbira here, which is originally an African, West African, and I think, well, actually, maybe in South Africa and Zimbabwe, thumb piano sounding instrument. But this is also, these are all modern instruments made in either the, well, none of, I don't think any of these instruments were made in the States, to be honest, actually. They're mostly made in Europe. So, and then we have a crystal pyramid that just, it's a nice way to sort of, to hear the overtones. Maybe we'll start with that just to really hear the strike of the sound and how the overtones are, play through it. So, and then we have this lovely hanging chime here. Also, these are wind chimes, and they're all drone-based instruments with a bunch of overtones.
Cool.
There we go. Yeah.
So I think we can, since it's gotten late, time is slipping away from us, we'll just go right into the end of the hour. At 8 o'clock, Tony Fallon will be here in the studio for the Irish Show. Thank you so much for listening. This is There on WGXC 90.7 FM.
We have a lovely visitor who has come.
Yes, come, Jim.
Come on in. Listen to the drones.
Yeah, they're starting a little drone.
It's a drone festival here. I love good interruptions.